starts. Not sure which record is going to work. Parsh Baluska. Okay. Top Shanayin. Hey, we're going with the following. Put Turk Yidala Pasig Dal. It says, Vasasuf Asher Bikir Bo. The rabble among them, the people that were among those other people, Yisavu Taiva. They had a tremendous desire. Vayashuvu Vayivku Gam Bnei Yisrael. They returned, they came back, and they made Bnei Yisrael cry out as well. Vayomer Miach Gilin Abasar. And they said, who's going to feed us meat? And here's the deal. This is what these people were doing. It goes toward the middle of the Parsha. There were three sins that Bnei Yisrael did toward the beginning of the parsha. They ran away from Har Sinai like little babies, running away as soon as they could to try to make sure they didn't have it. We have the guys that were known as the let's call them the misonanim, the complainers, and then the his Abu Taiva, the guys who had this taiva. So after the Jews left Har Sinai, the whole Dor HaMidbar, everything about them, they were restless. Right? When they ran away from Har Sinai, they were happy to leave without having any more mitzvos. They were good with what they had. They were just like, you know what, this is it. Well, we're perfectly fine. They hadn't traveled for almost a year. They had been at Har Sinai since Rosh Chodesh Sivan. This is the next year, right, in Chaf Ir, right before Rosh Chodesh Sivan. So it's almost been a year since they last traveled. They had been used to the place that they had. Now, granted, they were living in tents, right, within the Anani HaKavod, right, but nonetheless, they were used to everything. And it got hard. The travels were hard. To get up, pick up with your family, and to move everything that you've been used to, and to take that tent out and do everything you're doing is difficult. It's a difficult thing to do. For them to be able to get used to everything. So finally, they started to complain. Little complaints. The little complaints were, you know what? I'm a little annoyed. My feet are tired. I just, you know, the are we there yet type of guys. And that happened. That was the Nisonin. And that happens to everybody. That happens to everybody. Even the great people of Bnei Yisrael, there were people among them. Not everyone. There were people among them, it started to have that. Then came the mun. The mun was not a variety. It all was the same thing day after day after day, and what it looked and how it was. They wanted something different. So at first, they didn't complain. Subconsciously, there was a satisfaction that they were lacking, that they said to themselves they want to work on, etc. Had they worked on themselves, they would have realized that they could have avoided everything that was wrong. They could have avoided the disasters. But these emotions just erupted. It came out from them. It was just there until they started to weep. They started to cry over what was happening to them. Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky says that you have to look in between the lines. The real problem was not the food. After all, the mun really tasted like anything they wanted, right? So you couldn't complain about the mun tasting like, you know, just one little thing. So what was the real problem? Says Rav Yaakov Kamenetsky, they wanted more variety. They were looking at their lives and saying, we need something different. They had a complaint that was underneath the surface that nobody else could figure out. And the people said, oh, they just want more food. But wasn't it? Just giving you as an example. A guy comes up to me and he says to me, Rabbi, what you're saying doesn't make any sense because of X, Y, and Z. The real problem is not X, Y, and Z. The real problem is what he's trying to say, but he just can't get himself to say it. Whether he's not believing in this, or he doesn't really understand what the Torah is talking about, or he just grew up thinking something totally different. There's another problem involved. Sometimes reading between the lines and understanding what's happening behind the scenes is so much more important than just hearing what the person is saying and trying to answer his direct question. That's sort of like what we say with the Rasha. When the Rasha says, Mazos Lachem, Hakias Shinov, you have to figure out, sit down with him. What is he talking about? What does he really want? Is that really his problem? What's the real issue that's going on with the Rasha that he say, Ma'avod Azos Lachem? What's really going on? Says Rabbi Yaakov Kanetsky, that Chazal Darshan, based on these psukim, that they were complaining about what's Bocha al Mishpachosav. They were crying about their families, about Arias, that they were saying to themselves, there's something wrong. We want, they were using the food to bring up all their issues that they had about all the different Arias that they were now Oster to. And they said, we liked being married to our sisters, to our aunts, to our mothers, etc. We liked it. Things were good back then. Why did that have to change? They couldn't understand it. And the truth is, it took a very great man to figure all this out. Some of the incest, but not all of it. So in other words, Mrs. Bnei Noach, for example, right, was Oster to, you would have your sister, right, your sister from your mother, your Oster to your mother, and your Oster to Eshes Ish. Everybody else is technically mutter to a Ben Noach. Eshes Ish is whatever, but those are the three that are Oster. These people were Oster to their aunts. For example, according to one Medrash, Amram separated from Yocheved. because of the whole issue of what happened over here. Amram separated from Yocheved. He separated from his own wife. There may have been other people in Klal Yisrael who were married to people that they weren't allowed to be married to from now on, and they had to separate. And that was hard for the families. Each person was saying, you know, this is terrible for us. And although at first they accepted it, they said, look, we saw God in Har Sinai. As time went on, it got harder and harder. And as other complaints came on, they're just like, you know what? We've just got problems everywhere.
Of all the things that I just came up with, what they were complaining about, I mean, this is kind of, I mean, they were stuck in the desert. It's sort of intelligent they did in their day-to-day, but I guess they got kind of bored. But why is it that they're thinking that now certain rites are forbidden to them? I mean, there's a lot of other things they could report.
That's a great question. So why is it going to be that over anything else that's there? Why Arias over anything else? Give me a second for that, but that's going to be part of our answers that we're going to deal with the Mun. So here's the idea. Rav Victor Miller points out from the Pesukim in Devarim that the Mun was a pure test. That's all it was. The Mun was always a test. It did not taste like what you wanted it to taste like automatically. That didn't happen automatically without any problems. It would only be, it only was that way if you worked on it and you wanted it to taste like something, then the Mun tasted good. If a man wanted to enjoy the Mun that he was eating, he would be rewarded that it would taste delicious for him. But if he didn't want it, nothing happens. And the Mun tasted like absolutely nothing. The Mashiach explains the Mun was given to them in the schus of Moshe Rabbeinu. Moshe Rabbeinu had no taiva. If he's giving them that food had no ability to have any taiva within it. The Mun had nothing within it. And the people had no shaykhus to the level of Moshe Rabbeinu. They couldn't handle it. They were eating it. But you had to think while you were eating. Tell me right now, honestly, are you thinking while you're eating this tastes like a drumette? No, you're just eating a drumette. That's all you're doing. Are you tasting the chalin? No, you're just eating chalin. If you had to think about it and say, it tastes like a drumette, it wouldn't be the same thing. It's not the same thing as just putting something in your mouth and swallowing it down. The Mun took work. You had to sit there and say, drumette, drumette, drumette. And for them, there were so many people who didn't want to do that. They saw it as colorless, odorless food, a little white marshmallow that didn't satisfy them, and they had to exert themselves, and they couldn't figure out why God wanted it that way. They couldn't do that. Especially for those people who lived in huge homes in Egypt, the Arab Rab among them, who lived in luxurious homes with all their riches and everything that they had. They may have been a sad group, but they were sad, they were depressed, they remembered their life back then, and they were upset about it. And it spreads whenever there's sadness, whenever there's depression. People get sad very, very quickly. People shouldn't go, and we shouldn't fool ourselves. Had we been there, we would have been the first people on that line saying, we don't really like it. And it's a model for life, says Victor Miller. If you want to find the good life, the good in life, and to be happy, if you do that, you'll be rewarded with a happy life. But on the opposite, if you want to find the bad parts of life and see that you're sad, nonetheless, you're going to see everything that's there. Rav Schwab visited the Chafetz Chaim when he was about 16 years old. And he visited him. It was the only time he ever saw the Chafetz Chaim, Shimon Schwab. And he said he had it was the most profound impression that he had ever had. Chafetz Chaim was amazing. Chafetz Chaim asked him over Shabbos, what did the Mun taste like if you didn't think of anything? So people said it tastes like Kitzapikis Bidvosh. Maybe it tasted like the honey cakes that we're talking about. Whatever it was, right? Possibly there was something like that. And the Chafetz Chaim said it tastes like nothing. Because Ruchni food, food for the Malachim, when you're not thinking about it, when you don't want anything from it, tastes like nothing. It tastes like air. That's all it was to them. There was nothing else there. Only if you cooked it. Only if you put effort into it. Dachu b'madocha. Or tabasho b'mavushal. They cooked it when they did something to it. That's when it tasted like something. Otherwise, it tastes like absolutely nothing. That's what malachi food is. Malachi food does not taste like what you'd expect it to. Says the Kedush Yarim. You were only zocher to that greatness if you were on the level of a malach. It wasn't even just with the machshava. You still had to be great to be on that level. I mean, you have to have that machshava, the proper machshava, and then be a great person. It didn't happen otherwise. There would certainly be times where people were not in the mood. People did not want to do mitzvot. They were just not in the mood. There were those times where they just didn't want to do anything. And they looked at there and they said, I don't want my food to be simply based on the level that I'm at the time. I want my food to be food. And that's it.
Okay,
I hear what you're saying, but it's not the way. It's not the level of where you don't want to tie before it. It's that I'm thinking to myself, a Kaddish Baruch Hu has given me such great things, I have to appreciate what God has done for me. That's the level. You're right, but we're still human. We're not expected to be malachim and be totally tasteless and odorless. We were given a gift that all food has a taste to it. And you're allowed to have that taste into it. You have to think to yourself, while you're eating an apple and while you're eating something, you have to say to yourself, thank you, Hashem, for giving me the opportunity to have such a great thing. You have to think to yourself that. And when you don't, you don't. That's a classic Victor Miller thing, by the way. When you're eating an apple, think of how the apple was growing from the tree. Consider to yourself, what happened with that apple? That's something you always have to have inside. That's the idea that the Kedusha Rim was saying here as well. And that's that. They were trying to wean them off eating for pleasure and enjoyment. Most of the time when you're going out to eat, you're going out to eat for the pleasure of eating, for the enjoyment of eating, not necessarily because you're hungry. You make yourself hungry, but it's not for that reason. After everything, you should know, in the old science fiction books, in the old ones, we're talking like Heinlein and J.R.R. Tolkien, etc., the food that they had, the stuff that they're referring to back in the past and what's going to be in the future is all this tasteless, odorless stuff that just gave you everything you needed. It just was a pill, basically, that you got. You ate the pill and you had all the vitamins you had. That never will work in our society. That's never going to happen. All of our food, we enjoy food. We like being around food. It's something that just works for us. And this was their idea of what they were waxing nostalgic about. I'm sorry?
Well, they're demonstrating their boredom in a way, because when they're bored, they want to do something that excites them, makes them happy. So sometimes they're like, oh, I got a really good cake and I saw that. So they want to eat something that will give them more excitement.
Something that's going to give them something. And that seems, something that's going to add them on. I just noticed that all of your sheets don't have page 2. I apologize for that, so you're probably going to see a little bit, but my secretary will be fired tomorrow. Either way, regardless, we'll just say the following. The Miam Loei says that they roasted meat for the Egyptians. That's how they knew they looked like. We're just going to have to go on a little bit from there. The Shemi Shmuel points out one of the craziest little things that you could point out. Rashi and Bishalach, Tet Zayin Lamed Hei, says that before the mun fell, the food that they tasted, that they took out of Mitzrayim, tasted like mun. I think we all can agree that matzah is also odorless and tasteless, right? So matzah, all the matzah they took out of Egypt, tasted like the mun. All tastes like the mun.
Yeah,
I don't know. I bet I can't tell you. Regardless, that's that. When they were going in, I would assume not. Well, no, the whole time. Let's say, matzah would be the same thing. When the mun stopped falling, when they came to Eretz Yisrael, there was 30 days from Zion Other until Zion Nisan, going from Zion Other until Zion Nisan, where again, the food that they had, the mun that they had, sort of just stayed around, and it tasted like food, but it no longer had the same properties as the mun before. Instead of every morning you're going to get mun, they were allowed to keep it, store it, and they were allowed to eat it little by little, but they had to cook it this time. It was more than what it was. Says the Shemi Shmuel, it's obvious why. You can't switch off from normal food to mun just like that. You need a buffer period. They have to go from eating regular food to eating regular food that tasted like mun to the mun. And then when they ended, to mun that tasted like regular food to regular food again. You needed that buffer period in between. You couldn't go straight from one to the other. And the reason why was simple. This group, all the people that were there, had they just started in the month, it would have tasted like absolutely nothing to them. And they wouldn't have understood what to do or how to get about it. They wouldn't have understood anything whatsoever. They had to get used to the idea of what it was going to be like to go from regular food to the month, and then go from month to living in Eretz Yisrael. It had to be a little bit of an existence of storing, of getting yourself used to life and knowing what it's supposed to be. Here's what's happening right now. Bnei Yisrael is about to enter Eretz Yisrael. Shemi Shmuel says the most brilliant thing. They're right about to enter Eretz Yisrael. They're going in days. If not for Miriam, and then if not for the Meraglim, they would have been in Eretz Yisrael by the end of the month. That's what we call, by the way, Iyar, as the month when Mashiach is supposed to present himself and our travel starts. Iyar is supposed to be that time when we're ready to go to Eretz Yisrael and we're about ready to go inside. It hasn't happened. We don't know what it's going to be like just yet, but it's supposed to be an Iyar. Because Chof Iyar, when they left Har Sinai, their plan was going straight up, enter Eretz Yisrael by the end of the month. Before Sivan started, they were going to be in Eretz Yisrael. That was their plan. They walk over to Moshe Rabbeinu and they say, listen, we have an idea. We need to prepare ourselves. The same way that at the end of the day, by Yoshua, we're going to prepare ourselves to go to Eretz Yisrael. We're going to have the mun that's going to taste like food for the next couple, whatever, 30 days. We need to prepare ourselves. Give us a little bit of meat. Allow us to start getting ready for what regular food tastes like. Let's get used to this again, because we're not going to be, when we go to our soul, we can't just walk into the fields and start doing things. We're not used to it. We need to get used to it. It's not that they didn't want the mun, says the Shem Yishmor. It's that they wanted to get their life something regular, to get a regular everyday life, a mundane life, all back together the way it was. Bring us back to the way it was before so we can prepare ourselves. It was a noble idea. The problem was, they didn't realize how much the Yitzhar was getting a hold of them on it. Why'd they ask for meat? Why meat? So their idea was, well, the mun was what color? White. What does white stand for?
Pure.
Purity, midasa chaser, etc. Meat is red. So meat stands for midasa din. They thought they were going to go from midasa chaser, very cute. That's not. They were going from midasa chaser to midasa din. That's what they thought. They thought they were going to go from one to the next. From one to the next. But they were wrong. They were absolutely wrong. And here's the reason why. The reason why they were wrong is because HaKadosh Baruch Hu was going to prepare them for it. It was going to be the mun with the taste of the food. They didn't have to ask for meat. So why'd they ask for meat? HaKadosh Baruch Hu knew. Deep down inside, it was their Yetzirah that was begging for it. There were things that were going on in the inside of the Jews' minds, their hearts, what they wanted. And they sat there and they wanted meat. They didn't ask for an in-between food, a wafer, or a piece of bread, anything like that. They asked for meat. Kadosh Baruch Hu said, you're asking for too much. You're going from one extreme to the other extreme. From an extreme of ruchnius to an extreme of gashmius. And for that reason, says the Shem Yishmor, that we're going too far. They were way too far. He said, no. Here's a Gemara in Pesachim. Mem Tesamud Beis that says that Ami Arachim are not allowed to eat meat. And Amaretz can't. And the reason why is because meat can pull you down. The meat can get you into a world of taiva. If you've ever had ribs, there is nothing, nothing more gashmius than eating a thing of ribs. Than eating a big slab of ribs. Like if you remember Bugsy's. When Bugsy's were put together, that slab of ribs right there on your plate. And the Flintstones, right? The bedrock, right? You'd sit there and you'd grab one of the pieces and you'd gnaw it, right? And you'd sit there and you'd get... Your whole face is filled with barbecue sauce. Your hands are the dirtiest ever. And you sit there, when you finish, you just sit there. After everything's done, you have these huge bones that are sticking up from your table. And you're sitting there like, fag, need more. That's all your life. There is nothing ruchni about eating ribs. Literally nothing. You sit there with a 40-ounce steak. A 40-ounce ribeye steak. Listen, maybe there are people that are not like this. And if there are, I applaud you. I am not like this. I cannot find the ruchnius in a 40-ounce steak. 25-ounce steak, that might be there. But a 40-ounce steak, it's very difficult. There's just a lot of meat. When you get to that last 10 ounces, you're just like, I gotta eat. You can't get around it.
It's no longer about time anymore.
It's not.
It's about the goal.
The goal. No, it's true, but that is taiva. Taiva and gaiva that goes together as one. Says the Meshech Chochma. See, these people really wanted to get back to their old world, the world where taiva was available. They could eat delicious foods whenever they wanted. They wanted to be able to cook. That's why in Amaretz can't get involved with meat, because we don't want them to be involved with these types of taiva. I'm sorry? See, the funny thing is, if you're doing it for Kedusha, it shouldn't. So even these people, it shouldn't. But you have to be careful even with that. Getting used to certain things on Shabbos and Yom Tov can turn you away even during the rest of the week. You never know. On Shabbos. Yeah. The Amaretz also eats. We're just saying that an Amaretz has to be careful. He may not be eating it for the right reasons, which means he's going to pull him into that world of taiva. And if he's pulled into that world of taiva, then he's not going to be able to pull himself out. That's the idea, says the Gemara himself. Now, I will tell you more. Moshe Rabbeinu was the reason why they got the mun in the first place. As we said before, Moshe Rabbeinu had no taiva. Now we can understand the whole process that happened afterward. The people asked for meat. Moshe Rabbeinu goes up to a Kadosh Baruch Hu and says, may I in Lee Busser, where am I going to get meat to be able to feed these people? He said, if all of it is coming from my schus, my merit, I'm the one that's giving it to them. I can't give them meat. I can give them mun because I have no taiva. I can give them a food that has no taiva. I can't give them something that is filled with taiva. It's impossible for me. I can't do it. May I in Lee Busser, said Moshe Rabbeinu. Where am I supposed to get that? How am I supposed to give it over to them? That was his line. And that's why I cut his who told him such a strange answer. What was the answer? It wasn't, you notice, it wasn't, I'm going to give you meat immediately. It wasn't the slow. What was the first thing HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to him? Moshe Rabbeinu said, where am I going to get meat? I might as well not be here anymore. What am I supposed to do? HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Aspali Shivim Zakenim. Get me 70 old men, and we'll put them in charge. And only afterward did he say, and I'll give you slav. What's the shot in the 70s of kingdom? Says the Meshach Chokmah, it's obvious now. Moshe couldn't give them meat, but the Zakenim could. If the Zakenim are filled with taiva, and they're given extra koach from the ruach of Moshe Rabbeinu, an extra little bit of stuff from the nevuah of Moshe Rabbeinu, and Moshe Rabbeinu's nevuah is able to help them, the 70s of Zakenim on the level where they can give to Klal Yisrael, be mashpia for them, their food, but a spiritual food, food that comes from the heavens, so in other words, the slav, but on the same token, it would be meat. It would be a little bit of taiva added on. Moshe couldn't give meat, but the Zakenim can. No, that's a different line. Moshe Rabbeinu here is saying, I am Libasra, how am I supposed to do it? Hargeini Naharo, kill me now. I can't be here anymore because I can't be the leader of these people. I can't give them what they want. I can't give them taiva. Dvarim.
That's what he's quoting what he said now.
Agreed. But we see straight up Sukkim of what he wanted. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu's response was simple. Gather the 70s of Canaan to take over your job. Take over your job. Allow the people to have a little bit of taiva. But a taiva that's metered with Moshe Rabbeinu's ruchnius that's added onto it. That's the idea of what they're supposed to have. If it's done correctly, then everything will be okay. Rav Shor says basically the same idea. And it's really a Sfas Damas. I don't even have to quote Rav Shor. And it's really the Sfas Damas. Rav Shor just says it a little bit clearer. The truth is, these people didn't even really have a taiva. They couldn't when they were eating the man. But he's avu taiva. So have you ever heard like a Rebbe at one point tell you that when you daven, you're davening that you should want to learn? You ever heard that line? You don't want to learn, but you should want to learn. Right? It's something like that. He's avu taiva is the exact opposite. They had a taiva to have a taiva. They didn't have any taivos. They had nothing. They had no real desires. If you had gone up to them and said, do you want some meat? They'd be like, not really. But they wanted to have that desire. They remembered what they had in Mitzrayim. They remembered what all these things were like. And they said to themselves, you know, I wish we could bring ourselves back to the point where we could go ahead and have that desire and it'll work. That's the Yisavu taiva. See, everybody needs to have a taiva to do something. Taiva was created in this world to only do good, to bring it into Kedusha. And the idea behind taiva is so that you'll want to learn, you'll want to daven, you'll want to do things for Kedusha. They wanted to have more of a bren to do things. So they said, Yisavu taiva, we want to have more of a taiva so we can use it for Kedusha. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, you don't need this. You'll be okay. You guys are awesome as it is. You saw HaKadosh Baruch Hu on Har Sinai. You don't need that extra taiva. What's up?
You used to say that the priest Das brought taiva, but in order so that they could procreate only, and then you would eat the pre.
Meaning versus the Eitz HaChaim. That's another idea altogether. The pre Eitz, yes. The Eitz HaDaat originally was there to bring in that little bit of taiva, and the Eitz HaChaim was there to be able to stop it when they needed, in order for them to get a taiva, had it been eaten correctly. That's the idea, says Rav Shor in the Sfas Emes, and how it's going to be used over here. To end that off, we have a crazy little idea that really is a chiddush that's brought down the Kedusha Rim, the Kedusha Slavi, the Baal Shem Tov, it really goes like this. Says the Kedusha Rim, the taste they were able to have in the month were only foods that they were mutter to eat. If you wanted, as you said before, Dave, you want to have white meat as a taste in the month, you want the month to taste like pig? Impossible. The month could not taste like that. If you wanted a cheeseburger, you could maybe have a veggie cheeseburger. But you couldn't get an actual cheeseburger taste inside.
So make a thing of pork and it'll taste like shibuta and it'll be the same thing.
So I don't have an answer as to the. I don't have an answer for the why. He said that anything that's not mutter is there, and even the shibuta, there's the moch, the shibuta, you know, kulin kuflametes, even that gemara seems to be a little bit off. Maybe it somewhat tastes like pig, but it's not exactly the same taste. But you couldn't get that taste the way you wanted. It says the Kedusha Rim. Kedusha Rim says it, and he says it is a chiddush. He says, I think it's myself. He said that there's no way that they could get that meat. They couldn't get it inside. And that was the problem that Bnei Yisrael had. We want to get that taste in the month, but we don't remember what meat tastes like. because when we left Mitzrayim, it was a while ago. We haven't had meat like that since then. Since we've been out of Mitzrayim, we've had meat once by the Korban Pesach. You know, the Korban Pesach was one time when we had it, and that was a little bit of sheep or goat, right? But we want to know what meat really tastes like, the different types of meat, so we can get used to it, so we can taste it in the month.
But you forgot that you're kidding. You remember it's amazing. So that's what they were remembering. That was the time that they were...
And they wanted it now within the month. And they wanted to be able to get it within the month. And since they couldn't have it otherwise, it was hard for them to be able to imagine what it was like. The Kedushas Levi says it a little bit further. The meat that they had eaten in Mitzrayim was different. Now, I've not tasted not kosher meat, at least not to my knowledge, but I've been told that not kosher meat is unsalted. It just has a different taste to it. Chicken and meat is supposed to have a different taste than salted, shechted meat. It's supposed to have a different taste to it. Whether that's true or not, I have no idea. I have absolutely no idea. Whether it's more bloody, more whatever it is, I have absolutely no idea. But regardless, here was the Bnei Yisrael's problem. They remembered non-kosher meat, says the Kedushas Levi, and they didn't want to put non-kosher meat taste into the month. They knew that there was kosher meat, but they weren't sure exactly what to do with it. But they wanted to have a taste that was going to be in the month, and that was the reason for bringing it in. But the Kedushas Levi adds on a raya that's crazy. La'asid lavo, he says, we're going to have an awesome meal. It's Gemara Baba Basra, Ein Dalam and Alf, and Ein Dalam Abez. We're going to sit down, we're going to have the Livyasan. Livyasan is supposed to be there for us, and we're going to eat from it, like this huge whale that has scales, which is amazing, right? And it's going to be kosher, and we're going to eat the Livyasan. We're also going to have the Shor Habor. Shor Habor is this huge animal that's out there, this crazy rhinoceros-type creature, that again, that's kosher. And we're going to have a huge meal with the Shor Habor. We're also going to eat the Satan, which I'm assuming tastes good. I have absolutely no idea. I can't even imagine what that tastes like, but a kosher snake, I guess. That would be the idea behind it. We're supposed to be able to have these huge avuzim, these geese that are supposed to be unbelievably fat, dripping with fat. That's what we're supposed to have. All of these things are going to be there. Why would we have it? The Bach says in Chagiga Yud Beis Mabez that La'asid Lavo, when Mashiach comes, we're going to go back to eating the mun. So what are we going to have to do? If we're going to go back to eating the mun, we got to have taste to put into the mun. So we're going to have one awesome meal. It's going to be all the greatest tastes of the world put together. And then we're going to sit there and we're going to have the mun from then on taking all of those delicacies and putting it into our heads that we know what to think of when we have the mun from that point on. I don't know what it's going to be with any of the kids that are born. Yeah, I don't know. I can't answer you. But you know what? Be selfish about this. Take it for yourself, right? Have that meal and that'll be awesome. And that's going to be there. And when your kids ask you, Daddy, what does it taste like? You'll be like, you'll never believe it. I just say, there's nothing I can do. I'm sorry. Sorry, son, I really want to help you on this one. I just can't tell you, but it's awesome. Yeah, I'm so sorry. But maybe he won't even know because it'll never happen in the first place. Who knows what's going to be on that? But that's that. And then our final idea is the following. The Baal Shem Tov says the following idea. Re'evin gam tzmeim nafsham behemti satos. The people are hungry and thirsty, says the Baal Shem Tov. People were created with the desire for food and drink in order to be mala, the kedusha that's hidden inside the food and drink. Now, I know this is getting to a bit of a Kabbalistic subject. I know this is more for the Sephardim among us than maybe for the Ashkenazim among us who don't really understand this stuff. So when you have anything, continue from here on. But there is an ability to somehow understand that a Kadosh Baruch Hu puts sparks of kedusha within every bit of food that we have and every bit of drink that we have. That when used correctly, you can bring it up to a higher level, bring it to the level of ultimate kedusha. We're making a bracha on it. Bracha Rishona, Bracha Achrona changes everything about it. Makes a tikkun within the world and a tikkun within the food, and you can change everything. Yochanan Kohen Gadol, he says. Yochanan Kohen Gadol was messed over because he didn't make a bracha on food and ate food that was possibly treif, and therefore because of that, ended up becoming a tzeduki. Went off from that type of food. The mun did not afford people the ability to make those tikkunim. You couldn't make a bracha on the mun, although the Rama Mipano does say, if you make the bracha, bruchat Hashem lekin ha'chalom, right? Hamotzi lecha min ha'shamayim. That's the Rama Mipano. There is an opinion from the Zohar that whatever the mun tasted like, you made that bracha. So if it tasted like meat, then you made a shahakal. If it tastes like bread, you made a hamotzi, right? If it tastes like a cake, I'm sorry? Yeah, I don't know. It's a strange story because according to that, what's it like eating a jelly belly? You know what I'm saying? Like when you eat a jelly belly, you should make different brachos every time you have something, right? That would be the bracha on a jelly belly. That would be the idea behind it. But regardless, there are other opinions of what you make. The Habos Lechem Nishmayim is one of them. The question is Ashir Kedishem Zavzivanu Al Achila Saman is another bracha. bracha. But regardless, there's no tikkunim in the man. Here's what people wanted. Shisabu taiva was not what you're thinking. An actual taiva, a desire to eat, the want to be able to have something. You know what they desired? They wanted to raise the levels of neshamos that were there inside the man. They wanted to raise the neshamos. They wanted, within regular food, they said, we want meat. In order to bring down meat so that we could have tikkunim, we could say, like, that's Uncle Larry that's inside there. His neshama is stuck inside this meat. And by eating this meat, by making a bracha, I'm able to be metaking Uncle Larry. I hope nobody here is an Uncle Larry. HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, it's not for you. That's not your job. I don't want you doing this. This is not what you were made for. And that's why only the people who had the real taivas in mind were the ones that were killed. It wasn't very many people that died when they were Yisabu taiva. But there were people who had bad intentions in mind. But there were many people who had noble intentions. And now we'll go back to the beginning. Remember we started off when we said there was that concept called Bochal Mishpachos, they cried about their families. They cried about their families. It wasn't they were crying for a riot. They were crying that they no longer can make the tikkunim that the families needed in order for them to be raised up.